You are listening to the Subtle Forces podcast. I am your host, Anja, not Anja. Ja. So I'm trying something new old here. I am taking several records from my musty vinyl collection and crappily recording them with my cell phone and then playing them simultaneously to drive both you and me completely nuts for the next 29 minutes. Why? I guess I'm just hoping to evade instant arresting from the anti-pirate music police. So, even if I do get a cease and desist letter, it helps that every record here is on its own track. It's on its own path moving forward. So if any one of these records has some reps that bang on my door and hand me a cease and desist letter, I can just delete that record straight off. And then I will probably feel bad for a time, a respectable period of time, and then put in a different record in its place. And this way, everyone is equally disrespected or respected if you like this. I don't know what I'm doing, but I know that I need to do it. I've got sand in my pockets. I haven't been to the beach in The people in the next room over are all intensely discussing what is to be done with you. You, the one person on LinkedIn who disagreed with that post. A post that hundreds of thousands of people thumbed up and commented 100%. I could not agree more. At the risk of you never getting hired again by anyone who finds you on LinkedIn, you had to get right in there and disagree with the following very wise, very popular post. Surround yourself with people who talk about visions and ideas, not people. Vile, gossiping woman. You do not seem to understand that people can never be talked about.
I disagree. People are where it's at. People are ideas. People are visions wrapped up in people wrappers. Sure, there's outer space. There are no people there. There are things that happen in outer space. Is that the only thing we are allowed to discuss? If you remove people from conversations, you cannot read. You cannot read big fat novels like Charles Dickens. Charles Dickens is nothing but people. Weird people with catchphrases and odd characteristics. Sure, it's fiction, but life's the same way. If you go down to the corner and you run into someone who knew your aunt, you cannot discuss your grandma. You cannot discuss the people who knew your aunt, your neighbor, or anyone else. They're all people. You might remember how their house smelled, but you sure can't talk about it. It's not big concepts. It's just, hey, how's it going? How's the stock market? Uh-huh. All right. Good seeing you. Bye. Now, if someone is trapped underneath a fallen shopping cart, I sure hope you go over there and you unsnare the person from their horrid shopping cart. And I also hope you are able to go home later and call a friend and tell them about the shopping cart person in full detail so that you can release it. Except you can't, because talking about other people is just simply not okay. There's something about that that's just very tragic to me. As tragic as being trapped under a shopping cart. And I don't think it's different in the workplace. Unless you're like a CEO or something at the top of the ladder. I am absolutely not on the career track of becoming a CEO or a president or a queen. But I imagine if you are any of those things, you have to keep everything vague and friendly at all times, because you hold a lot of power. And your underlings can throw you over if you accidentally make the wrong joke, the wrong observation. When you consider how much hidden power they have, you can only stick to the mildest, nicest jokes, such as,
"Hey, can you do anything about this weather?" "Hey, marketing team, I have a concept for you I'd like you to try. It's called the sun. Can you bring the sun out of the clouds?"
I just imagine if you're a CEO, a president, or a queen, you just have a lot of sycophants at all times who want what you have. And who, when you say things like, "Can you do anything about this weather?" your sycophants just fall off into peals of the most flirtatious laughter. And they just say, "Oh, you. You're so funny. That's a good one." And you have to spend day after day, 5 days a week with these people.
"Hey, is that a smudge on your jacket lapel? Oh, wait, I'm not supposed to ask you questions of a personal nature."
"You're so funny." You have all sorts of minuscule beings that live inside of you that you never think about. You might even have a cricket in there somewhere, in some crook of your body you haven't washed in a while. You probably have 1 to 3 crickets. When you hold a microscope up to these tiny creatures that live within you, they sound a lot like when you handle a
balloon with your bare hands. They're very squeaky, and they're always scuttling from one end to the other. There's always something more exciting happening over there. Some extra bit of heat. So they're all running from one end to the other inside you. And they can't hold still. Right now you are full of frillions of wriggling creatures. Just wriggling so fast. It's like watching the wings of a hummingbird. You can't ever see when they are in any one place because they're just wriggling so fast. You are teeming with life. You are but one life that teems with many lives. Many lives you should discuss. Except you can't, because you don't know them. You can't interview them. Saying hello to them is somehow weird and one-sided. All you can really do with them is, like, guess at them. And maybe they don't have the same personalities as cats or dogs, but each one of them is still different and doing their own thing. Just wish them well. I wish you well, frillions and frillions of life forms that make me one life form. I wish you well, unless you make me itchy. Those life forms, I wish less well. But I don't wish him too unwell either, because then that could make me unwell, you know? You want everybody just well enough so that you can be well. Which, incidentally, is probably what you think when you are a president or a CEO or a queen. You want everybody just well enough so that they're not miserable and carefully taking notes on your wellness. No one here was expecting to be sitting next to one another in this waiting room called the Subtle Forces Podcast. None of these trumpets expected to be sitting next to these drums or the frying pan that is frying on the experimental music record that is playing. Or the car that is driving away. The past couple days, I've seen a person going past my window. He looks to be in his late 30s, early 40s. He has red hair and a beard. And a black round helmet, because he's on a hoverboard and he rides his hoverboard with great confidence, and he's wearing all black from helmet to shoes. And even more notable than his hoverboard or his helmet or his red beard is the fact that he has on a kilt and an expression on his face that is not happiness, that is not malcontentness, but it is exactly just neutral. He just is a normal kilt-wearing man going down the street on his hoverboard, as he does every day, because I've seen him on other days. I saw him yesterday, I saw him today, I saw him months ago. I maybe even saw him a couple years ago, and he's always going north. Now, I'm not supposed to tell you about him, because I saw a post on LinkedIn warning me not to, but I just feel compelled. I wish him well. I wish his microbiome well. And then there was the cashier, another member of gender ambiguous Generation Z, who asked the person they were checking out, "Would you like another bag?" But they didn't say it loud enough for their checkout person to hear, and so they just stood there without repeating it, feeling so awkward. And the man who was bagging his own groceries, who maybe wanted another bag but didn't get asked again, he had a beret on. He was my parents' age, meaning that he had witnessed the 1960s in a beret, and he has lived to this day in long hair and a beret, and he's very particular about the way he bags his groceries, just like my parents. Pack those bags with heavy on the bottom, light on top, and what touches within them matters a whole lot. And then there was that guy who's a wine bar barista who plays cribbage with his wife. And I asked him, "Oh, you play a lot of cribbage? Do you play the version with Muggins where you steal points from the other person if they forget to count their score correctly?" And he was like, "No, my wife's only been playing cribbage for a year. I wouldn't do that to her." But I also figured when he said that, he just wouldn't do that in general. He's not mean and Mugginsy like that. And then, a woman in the theater lobby asked me, "Hey, how do you know Lorelai?" And I said, "Oh, I'm her aunt." And this woman said, "Oh, I just love Lorelai." And she listed all the wonderful things about Lorelai. But as she talked about her, she didn't look at me. She looked at my friend who was with me, who's about 15 years older than me, as if my friend was Lorelai's aunt. Because she just immediately did the connection in her head that, Lorelai's 18 and this woman who claims to be her aunt is just too young to be her. So obviously I misheard things, and it's really the woman standing next to this very young woman who's clearly Lorelai's aunt. And then after the play, there was a teenage boy among so many who had shown up to the play to support Lorelai and the rest of their friends. And he was in awe afterwards. He said, "Wow, that was just like a movie," which indicated to me that obviously he's seen very little to no live theater before. But I like to imagine that this is just the beginning, where he realizes and quietly vows to himself, "Even if it means I have to use sleeves for toilet paper from here on out, I will always make sure that I buy season tickets to the theater." Yeah, he's also like, "Row E, seats 9 and 10.
those are just the seats I always get for all these plays.
And he's gonna go to plays, he's gonna go to dance, he's gonna go to musicals, and he's gonna say, you know, I like TV, but I love live theater.
Yes, it's just so much more tangible than watching show after show after show after show after show until I lose my mind at night in front of the TV. Theater has a way of enlivening and enchanting all your senses.
Right down to the extra tall man on your left with the garlic breath who has to take complete control of your shared armrest. Yes, I want to wish all theater goers everywhere a very successful experience with their microbiome this year. Just the healthiest internal environment you can imagine. And to all Subtle Forces podcast listeners who have trudged with me this far into the episode, my goodness, I wish you the most magnificent microbiome of them all. One that is so secure and healthy that you will never have to be interrupted in the middle of a play to attend to the needs of your system. Lastly, what the heck are you supposed to do when people die if you're not supposed to discuss other people? Are you supposed to not verbally process idiosyncrasies of the person you loved or the person you hated or the memories you have? You're not supposed to describe their hands because that's not an event. It's not a concept. I just lost my neighbor, my lifelong friend. She had babysat me so much growing up, and she'd remind me that when she was a girl, she was babysat by a woman who had been a baby on the Titanic. I have 2 degrees of separation from the Titanic. And anyone who I ever babysit in future can say that they were babysat by a woman who was babysat by a woman who was a baby on the Titanic. Anyways, my neighbor lady. Yes, let's describe her hands. White and papery with raised veins, wide knuckles. They were warm on the palms and a little cool on the outside of the hand. They were the wide-knuckled, active hands of an older woman who liked to beekeep. As a beekeeper, she would change out those hives with her bare hands. She'd let those bees sting her hands if they needed to. She had been stung hundreds of times before. She said, "Stand back, Anja. I don't want you to get stung, but I don't mind them stinging me. It's good for the immune system, these bee stings." And
I believe her now because she lives to be 99 years old up until this week. Thank you to Singing Bees for giving my dear friend a long and healthy life. My same friend who could play a mean Amazing Grace on her harmonica. She even had an outfit she'd wear to harmonica playing gigs. It had racing stripes that went up and down the sides of the legs. Part of me feels like it also had sequins, but part of me also thinks that that can't be true because she was a humble Christian woman who would take her harmonica duo around to various church conferences. And I think her and her duo, they were always a big hit with the crowds. One time, she gave me a harmonica lesson, but it didn't go well because it was too disgusting for me. Harmonica playing involves a lot of sucking, a lot of blowing, lots of saliva is exchanged in and out of the harmonica. There's lots of tongue work. My mind would just kind of obsess on all of these details. And she even told me, you know, Anja, never share your harmonica. It's full of all these microscopic beings that live in your lungs. And when you share your harmonica, you breathe in the microscopic beings of someone else's lungs, and it's just not good for you. So don't share your harmonica, Anja. And I took her advice. In fact, I took it so far that I never even practiced my harmonica again, let alone shared a harmonica. I love talking about people. And in fact, it can be hard sometimes to navigate traffic if you happen to see an interesting person nearby on the corner. You just have to look. You have to discuss. You have to take in people. Even if a LinkedIn post tries to make me feel guilty about it. What other people think of you is none of your business, as my friend Jessica likes to remind, and I in turn like to remind. When encountering any subtle force, you have both your logic and your feelers with which to interpret it.